It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, that big voice. He's not lying. We are living the dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3, The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I have been out of here for like 2 weeks, and I've missed you all.
Missed you too, Jeff.
I really have missed you, but I'm back for
back
better.
Back from assignment.
Yeah, better or for worse, I'm back. But I am your host, Jeff Paul, back here in the big seat. Sitting to my right, which is a bigger seat, the coolest dude in the city.
I don't know
the
about
most
that.
Knowledgeable sports man I know. Austin Danforth, good morning, my man.
Now you're writing checks I gotta be able to catch. I don't know.
I only say things that I know you can handle.
Okay.
I would never put you in a position you couldn't handle.
No, I don't feel uncomfortable, but
I mean, that's how much I respect you, Austin Danforth.
Thank you, man.
You know what I mean?
Thank you.
And my boy Aaron Wells back at it. I like the little, you know, like the razzmatazz you just added there in the beginning of the sports update.
Boys and girls,
girls and boys. Little, that's your little thing. I like that.
Then we had to remember what day it was.
Right. Well, listen, yep. One thing at a time. A little razzle dazzle first. We'll worry about the times and day later on. We'll work on that next week.
Inside peek. I write the sports updates the night before, and then I check them the morning of. So, and I didn't check them this morning.
Past you is writing for future you to live in the present you. So something like that.
Yeah,
time travel.
And he was crazy. He was a little sleepy.
Hey, listen. Well, you're up late watching your Red Sox put a beat down on the Angels, 16-4. You got that right. How about that? How about your Boston Red Sox?
I know nothing. I started camping last night. You've got me.
Playing hurt today.
No, I'm not hurt, but I unplugged at about 4 p.m. yesterday, so I don't know anything that happened.
The Angels starting pitcher for last night was throwing meatballs, and Mookie and JD both raked.
It must be. They must be pitching meatballs at the Red Sox if the Boston Red Sox scored 16 runs. I mean, if for the Red Sox team this year, I must have been pitching for the Angels last night or something for that to happen.
He was just dropping spinning 80-mile-an-hour sliders in the top of the zone, and they were getting cranked.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today, 802-655-6672, or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the same number, 655-6672. You mentioned you went camping last night. I am not a camper. I don't understand. Camping to me is like going to a Hilton, you know, a Days Inn, a Holiday Inn, whatever it is, but camping out in the woods where it's dark, it's dirty, and there are animals, snakes, and things is not fun for me.
So I like it. I'm going to go back to the state park as soon as the show is over.
And are we talking like tent or lean-to?
Tent.
So
yes.
you pitched your tent. Yeah. You're sleeping in the tent.
Oh, yeah. Got a new tent. This is the first trip for my new two-person tent. It's great.
Was there a fire? We had a fire.
I built a fire.
No kidding.
I grilled sausages over a open hardwood flame.
Did you have like the sausage on the stick? Was there a stick?
No, there was a
grill.
A grill grate.
Upscale camping.
Yeah. The fireplace had a little grate on top. Yeah, it's good.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
See, to me, that's just not any fun.
So
tell me, how is this fun?
It's like the fun thing is unplugging.
Okay.
And the only things I don't like about camping, one of which I got over pretty easily last night, would because I had several drinks and
just fell right
asleep. But I get like this very first world, like I live in an apartment in a city, you know, thing where like I get uncomfortable when it's like dark and I need to fall asleep and I should fall asleep, but I'm going to wake up early because it's going to be bright and sunny. Like it's like this, like I can't get myself off of my schedule to like just get into camping mode.
Right.
But that was not a big deal.
So last night, just closed the eyes, went to sleep.
I think I was in like two minutes.
See, apparently. To me, whenever I've camped, and it hasn't been a whole lot, but I've camped a few times. You know, I'm thinking about like, is there going to be a Sasquatch walking by? Is this going to be that moment? Is there a bear that's going to come out here and eat all our food? It's going to smell, you know, that I'm going to have to take care of that. I don't want to deal with that.
No.
Maybe a bobcat. What if God forbid, I open up my tent and there's a snake inside the tent or somehow that happens? These are the things that go through my head, Austin.
I don't think there's too many of those things in Grand Isle.
Okay.
So we got that going for us.
Well, we are in the sticks of Vermont, my friend. I mean, like, don't tell me you can't. There could be a Sasquatch cruising around somewhere.
And I think we're going to the Adirondacks Monday night.
So hold on a minute. So you're like on camping tour.
Yeah.
You're like camping all over the place.
Yeah, nice little 4-day weekend. Don't tell Alex Abrami.
I won't say a word about it. Hey, listen, what a show we have today, guys. We're going to talk to Eric Bolin, Yankee insider for New York Newsday. Tough game last night for the New York Yankees. Lost the game, but they had not lost a game since the trade deadline last week. They had won 9 games in a row. They are doing it with guys that you have never heard of before. Guys like Tauchman, guys like Urshela, just to mention a couple. The bullpen has been unbelievable. They've been getting unbelievable hitting in clutch situations. They're hitting the ball with 2 outs, just like the Red Sox did last year. Mm-hmm. They are really in a great position as a baseball team, but there are questions about this Yankee team. But if you're a Yankee fan this morning, you got to feel good about what's happening with your team.
I would assume so. One loss, okay, that losses happen.
That happens,
but winning streaks aren't a given. So you guys, if you're on a tear, you're on a tear.
Well, yeah, and again, it's going to be important going into the playoffs with as well as Houston's playing, with as well as, even the Dodgers are playing. If you're thinking about the dream of going to the World Series, mm-hmm. if you're a Yankee fan, and look, and you can say, I use the word dream with Yankees. I can say that because the Yankees haven't been to a World Series since 2009. I mean, it's been a long time since they've been in a World
Series
situation.
That's a wild thing to hear. Yankees haven't been to a World Series in a decade.
And they haven't won the AL East in, I think, like 10 years. I mean, I think the last time they won the AL East was in 2009. It's been a long time for them. So this young team is in a position. The Dodgers are on. You're going to want to get that home field advantage. And we know what Houston has done, through the trade deadline. They brought in Greinke. They've got that rotation that both mm-hmm. Cole and Verlander. Everybody seems to think, the talking heads seem to think that the Houston Astros are the team to beat. So getting that home field advantage will be important for the New York Yankees.
Oh, yeah. The Astros, to take the hockey phrase, they've been a wagon the last couple of years. So,
They have.
You're going to need to be loaded for bear to play them. So the Yankees haven't been to a World Series in a decade.
Yeah.
And the one before 09 was
the last
02?
World Yeah, the last one they were in was 03 was when '03. That was when Aaron Boone hit the home run in game 7 against the Red Sox. Yeah, 03 was the time before that.
So they've been to 2 since 03. That's
and for our era, that's crazy because the Yankees were so dominant in the mid-90s and early 2000s. And they were even dominant through, even when the Red Sox were in the championship, they were right there. But they've only been to a couple in the last 20 years.
To a young man like Aaron Wells,
right?
The Yankees are sort of a lesser team. They're not even the best team of his lifetime.
Well, to a kid like Aaron Wells, the Patriots are the greatest franchise ever to live for football.
Well, that's factual for everybody.
Well, what I'm saying is, but not if you grew up in my era. The New England Patriots were a laughingstock in the mid-80s and the early 90s. They were a joke. I mean, the Patriots were an afterthought.
I know that, but now they've...
Fair enough. But think about being a Boston sports fan and being Aaron's age, being a 20... What are you, 21?
20.
You're a 20-year-old kid. I mean, your Patriots are the model franchise, but if you look at the Patriots when I was growing up, they were not the model franchise. Your Boston Red Sox have won how many World Series since 2003? They've won, three or four? They've won 4 World Series.
Four.
I mean, think about that for a second. The two franchises that were actually people used to laugh at in the 80s and 90s, Red Sox were never laughed at for not being great, but they were laughed at for never being able to win.
Yeah.
And the Patriots were laughed at because they were the Patriots. I mean, they were the Cleveland Browns before the Cleveland Browns were the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
I mean, it's been a good time if you're a Boston sports fan, not to mention what's gone on with the Bruins and the Celtics. It's been a pretty good thing for Boston sports
fans. Yeah, but do you think... The way that the turn of the century, whatever we want to call it, do we want to call it the turn of the century? Because that sounds like really, it sounds makes us sound old. Everybody
we
sounds
are old.
Turn
I'm
of
old.
The century. But year 2000, since then, Boston's been a different town.
It has.
And the Yankees, oddly enough, after that, the magical, run you guys had ended.
Yeah.
That feels like a lifetime ago, and it is entirely a lifetime ago for someone like Aaron Wells.
It really is. And so the Yankees right now are in a position where they need to continue to win because you want to get that home field advantage. And let me just say this, because I haven't been on the air since the trade deadline. The Yankees took a lot of heat for not making any moves. We saw what happened. There was a few big name pitchers out there. Marcus Stroman being the biggest name. He goes to the New York Mets, who we're going to talk about. By the way, how about those New York Mets?
Yeah.
I mean, the Mets win again last night in spectacular fashion. The Todd father comes up and, Todd Frazier, 2 runners on in the 9th inning, down 6-3 against the Nationals, against one of the premier pitchers in baseball and relievers in Doolittle for the Nationals. Mm-hmm. Turns around a 3-run homer, and then Conforto drives him in later on with the winning run. I mean, right now the Mets are rolling. They're a half a game out of the wild card. They're in a great position.
Is Yan and Underhill going to chime in to let us know?
Yan must be psyched right now. I mean, Yan, the Jets Mets guy. I mean, my goodness, Yan, if you are, I'm surprised you haven't called in yet to get to talk about your two teams.
Well, his update last week was they still suck, so I don't know if he's watching the same thing as you.
Well, let me just say this. You know, the Mets picked up, and that looks like a brilliant move to get Stroman now, but mm-hmm. the Yankees didn't make a move. There was a lot of the quote-unquote know-it-alls here in our media, and we got a lot of them, and they're all reactionary. I mean, we see something, and we freak out immediately. But what exactly did you want the New York Yankees to do? I mean, Marcus Stroman, is it the Ray guy, the pitcher from the Arizona Diamondbacks, Ray? I mean, who else was out there that the Yankees were going to go, that could go get, that you were going to give up some of the bigger pieces of their farm to go get, when you know that you've got a guy like Severino potentially coming back?
Yeah.
You know you've got a Dellin Betances potentially coming back. You know you've got these pieces coming back. What exactly were the Yankees supposed to do when you looked at some of the deals that, say, Toronto wanted for Stroman, what Arizona wanted for Ray? When you look at those situations and you think, what exactly are the Yankees supposed to do there? And I'd say the same thing about the Red Sox. The Red Sox made no move either. People couldn't believe that. But the Red Sox farm system is depleted to the point, who out there is worth depleting your system more to bring into a team? I don't know if the answer's out there.
No, and the way the season's gone for the Yankees, the best deadline moves they could make were just getting people healthy. Like, that's it. Right. Like, they got great players that could come back, and then all of a sudden, like, your AL East leading team making the playoffs isn't going to be, in all likelihood, an issue. So you just need to get hot at the right time.
Well, the Yankees are on pace for 106 wins right now. So I don't think, and they were not any worse before the deadline. So I don't think it really makes sense to press them to make moves right now when they're set up for success already.
The issue with this, though, is the Yankee starting rotation has been abysmal for the majority of this season. I mean, I don't have their team ERA, but I think it's somewhere in the high fours. They don't have a legitimate ace right now in this rotation. Their bullpen is arguably maybe one of the best in baseball, if not the best in baseball, but the rotation's been very, very poor. So I think that's the argument. And when you look at a team like the wagon, you call the Houston Astros, who now gets Zach Greinke, who, by the way, would not go to New York, had a no-trade clause. There was teams that he would not go to. The Yankees were one of them. He goes to Houston, and people freak out. Like, oh, how are you supposed to beat the Houston Astros now when you got those three starters? I don't know how you do it. You got to go play the games and see what happens.
Right, exactly. And so the other thing, I mean, the Astros are at a different point in the cycle, in like their window of excellence. Like, the cycle that they're in, like, they're in what? It's now year three or four of this.
So, like, by Houston.
Houston, yeah. Astros, yeah. So they're getting into that point where you have to start making moves to sustain that. The Yankees are still on the upswing. They're approaching that window. They're early in that stage. You don't need to, like, be drastic and make those moves now when, you know, the future remains bright without doing anything.
And I agree with you, but what moves were there to make?
Right.
Was there a Zach Greinke, a Garrett Cole, a Verlander out there that you said, okay, you know what, those guys are worth giving up Frazier. They're worth giving up I'm spacing the name, the number one pitcher they have in their system right now. Is it worth giving up those guys to get these guys in here? Is it worth that? No, it's not. Are you going to give up Miguel Andujar to get Bobby Ray? Is that his name? Bobby Ray, Danny Ray, Robbie Ray, whatever his name is. I mean, what's the point of that? I mean, was Marcus Stroman worth that? No, he's not. I mean, Marcus Stroman last night, if you watched the Mets game, and I watched some of that because obviously the show's coming, I like to be ready, and the Mets are a pretty good story. He looked like he is. He's a fourth starter, third starter. And in the American League, I mean, you're going to give up those guys for Marcus Stroman. You can't do that. Now, if there was a guy out there like a Garrett Cole or a Jason Verlander like a couple years ago when Houston got him from Detroit, then you can say, oh, you know what? He's that difference maker. But if there's not a difference maker on that, you cannot franchise, take your future of your franchise and give it away for a guy that's not going
to
help you.
You're not making moves to make the playoffs. You're making moves to win in the playoffs. So what's a fourth starter going to get you in the playoffs when you're running guys, you know, on limited rest, 4 days rest anyway? So you're not probably going to get past your third starter unless stuff goes pear-shaped.
It's true. Well, we'll talk to Eric Bolin about that in New York Newsday at 10:20. And we are going to talk about the Mets with Matt Ehealth. He's an MLB insider, Mets insider for Yahoo Sports. We had Matt on about a month and a half ago. We were talking about where the Mets were going. We were talking about what they'll do with the trade deadline. But what the Mets have done now is put themselves right smack in the middle of the playoffs. They have leaped. They were at the trade deadline. There were 10 teams between the Mets and the wild card spot. Now they are a half game out. I think they've jumped over 8 or 9 teams in a matter of, 2 weeks? It's amazing what they've done, and spectacular last night. They come up with the huge win. I mean, listen, the Mets are 4 games over 500, and I think Brody Van Wagenen recognized that this is a team that needs to win now. But what a position they put themselves in to get to the playoffs, and they're a fun story.
Yeah, they are, because the way things have gone recently, you're like, oh, they could just be. I think we've tossed out the term dumpster fire before.
Yeah.
So like anytime you can put out that fire and become something salvageable, or even, watchable or enjoyable.
Yeah.
You're moving in the right direction. That's fun.
Yeah, it is. We'll talk about that. Before we go, though, I want to get to the Green City Garage poll question today. Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, 802-651-9299. They're an environmentally safe garage. They are an unbelievable. See Chris Wallace. Check them out. I've had this Twitter fight all week with this one guy about who you rather have, Pete Rose or Mike Trout.
Mm.
Pete Rose at his prime, Mike Trout at his prime. Who do you got?
I don't know.
I got Pete Rose. I mean, I'll take Pete Rose any day. A gamer, 4,000 hits. You know that he's a hit machine. He hits good pitching, hits bad pitching. He wins. Mike Trout's a tremendous athlete. Love to have him on our team. He's a great, unbelievable player. But when you're talking about two guys, I think Pete Rose is one of those guys that he could be on the Mount Rushmore of one of the greatest players ever to play the game.
Oh, he the hit king.
Yeah.
He's the hit king. But like, I'd love to see Mike Trout. Like, I wish we could transport Mike Trout back to Pete Rose's time, because I'd like to know what, everybody makes a big deal out of what he does, his stats, his war, all these, just the amazing, well-rounded player he is. I'd like to see what that looked like in a time before everybody geeked out about the stats.
I agree with that, and I'd also like to see a time where it wasn't about launch angles and home runs, and more about contact and seeing things where you don't see a lot of guys that hit in the mid-threes anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? You just don't.
Yeah.
I mean, guys that hit 300 are enigmas nowadays. Now you're seeing guys that are making big contacts hit 220 but hit 40 home runs.
Right.
It's a different era.
Well, I obviously didn't get to do the eye test with Pete Rose. I didn't watch him play. But looking at the stats, like Austin said, with war, Mike Trout's great. He also has a higher career batting average as of right now. And he's got a good number of home runs for his career point right now. I think his stats are better. I think if he stays as good as he is for the rest of his career, he'll probably go down in history as the better player. But I mean, Pete Rose, 24 years and an excellent career the whole way through.
Better than excellent. Arguably one of the best careers that's ever played. So interesting thing. Go to our Twitter page at 1013 The Game and give us your answer. You got Pete Rose or you got Mike Trout? When we come back, we talk to Eric Bolin about my New York Yankees.
44 News.
Now back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning. It is Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. Listen, man, it's been some season if you're a Yankee fan. And it's been easy, and even for a fan, and we were just talking, last segment about, for a lot of kids, I mean, the Yankees have been kind of an afterthought for the last 10, 11 years. I mean, they haven't won a championship.
Not even the best team in their division.
They really haven't been. They haven't won a championship since 2009. They haven't won a division in I don't know how long. I mean, it's been a long time for this baseball team, but they're an up-and-coming right now, and they've got a lot of young kids playing. I mean, they're on track to win 106 games. I mean, they won 100 last year. They're running away with the American League East. However, there are questions, and the pundits keep telling us there are questions. All the experts out there keep telling you the Yankees aren't good enough. They're just not good enough to win. So who better to talk to than our friend from New York Newsday, Yankee insider Eric Bolin, here on TikTok Jewelers Guest Line. Good morning, Eric. What's happening, buddy?
Good morning, Jeff, Austin. How are you guys today?
Doing fantastic.
Doing really good. Eric, let's get right into this team. I mean, you follow them every day. You're with them on a day-to-day basis. I mean, it really is pretty amazing what they've done so far, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is my 11th year covering the Yankees, and they've had, people forget, they've had, in terms of total number of injuries, they've had years like this. What they haven't had is the fill-ins, not only adequately replacing those who have been injured, but actually providing more in some cases than what the guys who they replaced might have done. And so you just go on down the list, and obviously Gio Urshela kind of jumps to the head of the pack of guys that have you know, played a huge role in this from a quote replacement to standpoint. But you know, look, I mean, I've always thought, and I've been doing sports media, been in it since 1996, and I've always thought one of the myths is that injuries are not an excuse. Injuries are actually the ultimate excuse. You take four or five, six of the best players away from any team in any sport, and sorry, that is a legitimate excuse. The Yankees this year have had have taken those kind of hits, and not only have survived it, they've thrived, and as you mentioned, are on pace to win 106 games. And no, I mean, in my time covering the Yankees and my time covering Major League Baseball, I've never seen anything like it.
Eric, we were talking in the last segment about this Yankee team and the criticisms they've taken from not making a move at the trade deadline. But I would argue that none of those pitchers, players, relievers out there were worth the packages that the Yankees were going to need to offer to get those guys. Two questions here with one thing here. Number one, do you think the Yankees made the right move not going after some of these guys, the Stromans and the Rays, you know, those kinds like that? And number two, do you think it's galvanized this clubhouse with basically the front office saying, you guys are good enough, now go win it?
I'll take the second question first. I don't think that it galvanized the clubhouse. I mean, this team, from the time they got together in spring training, they thought they were pretty good. And there's just sort of a confidence that pervades the clubhouse, regardless of who is in there. And again, that's been there since spring training. And before the trade deadline, this team was well on its way to winning the division. So I'm not sure them standing pat at the trade deadline had any kind of a more positive effect and created more of a positive vibe in the clubhouse than what was already in there. In terms of whether it's the right or wrong decision, you know, we'll see. And I hate to give a cop-out answer like that, but, you know, the reality is this team's going to win the division. What they're fighting for now, and it's not an insignificant thing, is home field advantage in the American League playoffs. And that's no small thing, and the Yankees discovered that in 2017 when they lost game 6 and 7 in Houston, which is a team that I think a lot of people at this point think that that's a fait accompli, that that's going to be the ALCS. Again, we'll see. Minnesota, Cleveland, Oakland, Tampa might have something to do with that, but both those teams certainly are the big favorite. So I'm not downplaying the race for home field advantage because I think it could end up being fairly significant. But you know, we're not going to know about this pitching staff until we get to October. That's sort of the bottom line. I know everybody wants to say that, well, this is not a team that can win in the playoffs with the rotation that they have. But the reality is what's traditional and what you traditionally would want out of your pitchers in the postseason has completely changed in recent years. Anyone watching the postseason could see that. And so they have really in their bullpen, they're 5-6 deep. And if they get a good outing out of a starter for four innings, their bullpen allows them, you know, probably to get through any given game where that occurs. So, you know, look, was it worth giving up a couple of your top prospects for, let's say, Robbie Ray, who is a good middle of the rotation guy, but not a top of the rotation guy? I still might have made that deal, to be honest with you, because Ray is capable on occasion of pitching like a top of the rotation guy. But you know, really, you know, you put a gun to my head, I would have made the deal, but I understand why Cashman held fast. And if you talk to people, by the way, in the industry, opposing executives from other teams and scouts and talent evaluators from other teams, you know, they're fairly split in the straw poll, you know, that I did after the trade deadline talking to those guys. Some thought Cashman should have gone for it and given up the prospects, and then some thought he did the right thing by not making a move and not being held hostage, for lack of a better phrase, on some of his top prospects for guys who, as you mentioned, aren't, you know, top of the rotation difference makers the way, let's say, Justin Verlander was a couple of years ago for Houston.
So the pitching is one thing to be potentially wary of as we hit the stretch run. I mean, and one thing that might be a banana peel or present a banana peel down the road. But I'm thinking, like, these young guys that have stepped up, I mean, they've had a fantastic season. What concerns might there be that, you know, when it really gets to crunch time, they might not like that. That level of maybe seasoning isn't there, and they might it might bite them.
I don't think that's a concern at all. I mean, remember that a lot of these guys were in the playoffs 2 years ago when the Yankees made that run to the ALCS, which kind of came out of nowhere. Remember, they upset Cleveland, which had that incredible winning streak. I think it was 22 games. And they were the heavy favorite in the division series against the Yankees, and Yankees ended up winning a game five in Cleveland, and then led the Astros 3-2, completely dominated Houston in the 3 games in New York, and then Verlander did what he did in game six, and then, you know, the Yankees got shut down in game seven also. But, I think that's one of the myths of sports too. I mean, I think it's any given series or any football game, if you will, playoff game that involves a young team, I think that you can, it's like a Rorschach ink blot test. It can tell you what you want it to tell you, and anytime a young team loses, automatically the narrative in the media, and it's a lazy narrative, is just to say, oh well, they're a young team, so they were overwhelmed by the moment, when in fact there's really no there's nothing tangible to prove that point. And then when a young team does win a series or win a game in the NFL playoffs, whatever it may be, then we say, oh, we'll see, they're young and up and coming, and they were able to overcome those playoff jitters. Nobody knows. You know, there's no science to it. But again, with a good portion of this team having already gone through a playoff run, that's certainly not high on the list of concerns. It's not on the list of concerns at all, insofar as the Yankees are concerned for October.
We are talking to New York Newsday's Yankee insider Eric Bolin here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Eric, yesterday was a big step for Luis Severino. 30 pitches off a mound yesterday. What are we hearing about that?
Yeah, he said that I asked him afterwards, a group of us went to talk to him after the bullpen, and I said, so how would you describe that? And he smiled. He just said, perfect. And then went on to explain that it's the first time that he's thrown a bullpen session since March, if you can believe it, before he got hurt in spring training, and said that everything felt better than he thought it would. He thought that his secondary pitches, that he'd have no feel for them whatsoever, and he broke off sliders, got the changeups, and said that it actually, you know, those pitches felt really good coming out of his hand. So, and his arm feels strong, and, you know, and 4 weeks, let's say, you know, he could be a factor for this team. He's not going to be stretched out. It takes guys usually, you know, 6 weeks of spring training to get completely built up. The Yankees don't have that kind of time with really about 6 weeks left in the regular season. But what they may do is either use him out of the bullpen or have him start a game and do it the way you do in spring training, how you stretch guys out, where you throw him in there and he goes 3 innings, and then he's done. And then 5 days later, he bumps it up to, let's say, 5 innings. And then after that, it's 6 or 7 innings, whatever. Or they could bring him out of the bullpen and build him up that way. So that's sort of up in the air. But, you know, barring any setbacks, I think that he possibly is a player for this team in maybe a month or so.
And with Jonathan Loaisiga almost back as well, had a big night last night in the minor leagues, and obviously we hope that Betances will get back. I mean, maybe Cashman not making a move and getting these three pitchers back potentially for the playoffs could be a big boost for this baseball team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Dellin Betances, certainly a guy when he's healthy, people forget he made 4 straight All-Star games just a couple of years ago. You know, he's as good as they come when he's right. Severino has shown that when he's healthy, he has ace-like stuff. People forget that the All-Star break a year ago, him and Chris Sale, far and away, were the Cy Young favorites. And obviously, it was a rough second half for Severino. But yes, he could be a huge boost. And Loaisiga has shown, you know, sporadically, signs of being a good major league pitcher. If he does become a factor for this team, it's going to be out of the bullpen. They wouldn't put him in the rotation. But, you can never have too many good arms, and you can never have too many fresh arms, particularly this time of year.
And in a way, I think the Yankees are 9 or 10-0 when they use a starter, when they use the guy that just pitches 2 innings to start the game.
An opener.
I mean, Loaisiga would be a perfect guy in that rotation as well, right?
Yeah, I could see them going that direction. Though Chad Green has done it, I believe it's 10 times now.
Yep.
10 out of the 11 times the Yankees have done it. So I would imagine he's going to do it again today at Rogers Center. I would imagine they'd look in that direction just because he seems comfortable with it. But Loaisiga, the fact that obviously he is a starting pitcher, it could fulfill that role if they wanted him to.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left. Last night, a really strange ejection with Brett Gardner. Obviously, the home plate umpire had a fairly large strike zone. The Yankee dugout was pretty upset. The umpire thought it was Brett Gardner. It wasn't, but he threw him out of the game. Do you care to comment on what happened there?
It was a strange situation, and usually what you see from umpires in that situation is they'll whip their mask off and they'll throw up a stop sign to the dugout and basically say, hey, look, I don't know who just yelled something. I know a lot of you guys are yelling stuff. Stop now, or people are going to get run. There was no warning last night. And so if you're going to just throw a guy out, you should be pretty darn sure about who it was. And what that umpiring crew and Chris Siegel, the umpire in particular who threw Gardner out, his trouble is going to be the video, because the video is pretty pretty concrete in terms of who said what, and you can clearly see Gardner not saying anything, and you can clearly see Cameron Maybin saying what the umpire accused Gardner of saying. It's an unfortunate situation, and umpires, I'm not an umpire baiter necessarily. Anyone that follows me on Twitter, I like to say I'm hard, but I'm fair. But I think I'm pretty fair to umpires. I think that they get more criticism than they deserve. I think balls that are a quarter of an inch off the plate and people go nuts about that, I think is ridiculous. That said, what happened last night should not have happened, and that was an overreaction by a call-up umpire. He's not full-time staff. There's about six to eight umpires from AAA level that when the big league umpires go on vacation, get opportunities to umpire during the year. And Chris Siegel, last night, the plate umpire, has been a call-up guy for the last few years, and actually has a decent reputation. He overreacted last night and did not handle the situation well.
Eric Boland, you're the best. Thanks for the time. We'll try again down the road.
I look forward to it, guys. Have a good rest of the weekend.
All right, you too. Eric Boland, live from Toronto. Interesting take on the Yankees. I mean, he's pretty straightforward with what's happening here. I mean, I still don't agree that you got to trade to get these guys. I mean, I just don't think Ray, Stroman, Green, the reliever for Sean Green from,
Sean Green, wasn't he like 20 years ago?
Sean was different Green. This is the younger kid that was, he pitched for the Yankees. He was part of the trade for Didi Gregorius. There's an opportunity to bring him back. None of those guys out there fit the bill for the package Yankees are going to have to give up. And if you get Severino back, Loaisiga back, and Betances back, you got what you need right there to win a championship.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a quick break when we come back. I have to say, I've had an epiphany here, folks. I've changed my mind completely about a topic that I've been yelling about on this show for 4 years.
I can't wait for this.
We'll be right back.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line. 802-655-6672. We talked a little bit about the Mets and the Yanks. Just talked Yankee baseball with Eric Boland. Jan from Underhill. Great win last night by his Mets, but he thinks it's smoke and mirrors. They'll probably finish five games under 500, but he does want to say J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets. You know what, Jan? I mean, listen, if you look at the National League dynamic, and I don't want to get into the Mets because we have them next hour, but if you look at the National League dynamic, there are so many bad teams in the league. You know, for the exception of really the Dodgers and maybe the Braves, I'll throw out there, are the two probably elite teams out there. I mean, the Mets have a chance to make the playoffs. And if you get in the playoffs with that rotation, and DeGrom and Syndergaard, and as much as I didn't think Stroman was worth what the Yankees would have to get up to get him, to have those three guys along with Wheeler in that rotation, you could make some noise in the National League if you get in. And, I mean, you know, and they're hot. and they're rolling and they've got a good offense. I mean, that's a baseball team that could be pretty dangerous. I'm surprised that Yan's off the bandwagon so quick.
I mean, Austin, you talked about how in the postseason, what really matters is those top three guys in the rotation. Your top two of your top three are DeGrom and Syndergaard. So if you can make it into the playoffs,
yeah,
I think you're automatically a contender as that team.
If you can get four starts out of those dudes in a 7-game series.
Well, and you also have Wheeler in there. No one talks about Wheeler and Stroman. I mean, you have when you have to face a third or fourth starter and you got to put those guys out, which would be maybe twos or threes for other teams,
right?
You got a good chance to win. And when you got guys like Pete Alonso in that lineup, guys like McNeil in that lineup, I mean, there's some good guys that lineup can hit. I mean, the Mets are in a good position today. You have to give them a ton of credit.
How much do you guys trust TMZ's reporting?
I don't look at it much.
Because TMZ just reported that a Cardinals defensive lineman has been arrested for some sort of firearm issue.
Okay.
Just breaking news.
Yeah. Okay. We'll keep an eye on that. We'll keep an eye on Darius Fillin.
Yeah. And so is this where we get back to him talking about the Jets and we laugh a little bit?
Oh yeah. The Jets. We'll get to the Jets. We're going to talk about that as well. Talk about the reactions and overreactions of the preseason. But I do want to bring this up because I think it's kind of important. I have for the last, one of the biggest pet peeves that I have is officiating in major sports, whether it be umpiring, officiating, refereeing, whatever you want to call it. During the NFL, it drives me batty how poor it is. And during Major League Baseball, especially this year, the umpiring has been historically bad. I mean, just terrible. I mean, as Charles Barkley would say, terrible. Just absolutely horrible. College basketball, which is my favorite thing. I love college basketball. I think the officiating that is very spotty and poor. And even as a big Virginia Cavalier fan, Virginia benefited from some very difficult calls against teams in the Final Four to help them get to that position. So I get where people are frustrated with officiating. So aren't I. So let me just premise that. But I've had a bit of a turn of heart, a change of heart in terms of what I think needs to be done to fix it. We become so reactionary in our world today that when something bad happens, we have to fix it immediately. I think back to the New Orleans Rams game last year where the blatant pass interference call wasn't called.
Yeah.
It turns out that, you know, the Rams end up winning the football game. They go to the Super Bowl. Everyone thinks that New Orleans should be in the Super Bowl. No one wants to talk about the ridiculousness of Sean Payton's play calling when they got into field goal range, number one. But I digress about that stuff. So now we have a rule in the NFL that you can actually, and I think you guys may have touched on this last week, that you can now, and it happened in the Giants preseason game against the Jets, you can now review a pass interference call in the NFL, if you think. I mean, what are we doing when we start taking the human element out? We're talking in baseball, and the strike zone has been all over the place in Major League Baseball. Now we're talking about there are some independent leagues practicing with computerized strike zones. So basically, the umpire is there, but they're saying strike when the computer says beep, like it's a strike or it's a ball. When you start taking the human factor out of these games, I think you're really doing a disservice to what sports is all about. You know, let's think for a minute, if we can think back here to guys like Greg Maddux, pitcher for the Atlanta Braves, who became Greg Maddux by expanding the strike zone, getting that little call off the edge. Think about how many pitchers will not be able to pitch in baseball if we have a computerized strike zone. I mean, it's human element. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, you have to adjust, and that's what it's about. You're taking all of it away. And in the NFL now, in a league that doesn't let you play defense at all, you can't, you know, these guys, you know, the NFL defensive linemen are, you know, their heads down. They run into a quarterback that's already thrown the ball. It's a penalty. I mean, you can't hold anybody. You can't play defense in the NFL. Now you have a little bit of this guy. Well, this guy kind of grabbed his towel a little bit, or maybe he had his hand for a second before he knocked the ball away. We have the challenge flag, and now we're going to challenge that stuff. Just let the game be the game. And we talk about this all the time. But just the thought process for me to think that it's actually okay for us now that we're going to nitpick it to a point where now we're going to be able to turn pass interference calls over because of judgment plays, I think is bad for the game. Now, somebody will say to me, well, isn't it about getting the play right? Maybe. Or maybe it's just playing the game and letting it fall the way it happens. If you have a tough call, you got to figure out a way to get over that call.
Don't miss the big ones like that.
Exactly. I mean, am I right about this? Like, look, I know they're poor. I mean, we and I talk about it. You can't watch baseball. I watch a lot of baseball. And my buddy Duke's in here. We're going to play golf later on, by the way. That is going to be interesting watching my buddy Duke swing a golf club. But we're big baseball fans. We talk all the time when we're talking about how poor umpiring is. My father and I talk about this. My friends talk about it. We talk about this on the air. Refereeing in the NFL. How terrible and egregious was that call against the New Orleans Saints? Egregious. Terrible call. Something had to be done. But now we have to change the whole premise of what we do as an organization or a league by saying, if there was a really bad call, so here's how we're going to fix it. We're going to have coaches be able to challenge that next time. No, that's not the way it's supposed to be done.
I'm curious, like when, let's say before you were born, like when your dad was growing up.
That wasn't that long ago. Yeah.
No, clearly.
I'm very young.
Did people like whinge and just whine about officiating 45 years ago as much as we do now, 50 years ago?
I mean, maybe they did. I don't know.
Has the officiating degenerated to the point that like all we can do is whine about it and like be up at arms about like, oh, these guys are awful. Like, basically, I'm curious, do we have it so good we're just finding stuff to like complain about in one way or another? And what sports fans complain about is the umps, because otherwise life is pretty darn good in New York 2019.
Or we live in a everything is on TV. We live in a social media world, so everybody sees everything whenever they want to. There's replays, there's Twitter, there's Facebook, there's everything. And now it's just out there more. We have slow motion replays. We can break it down to the millisecond. We can see everything. We have to talk about, we have 24-hour news cycles and 24-hour sports cycles. We have to talk about things every single day. But when you start to take out the human element, aren't you ruining the game?
Well, you do have to consider the fact that part of the reason they feel the need to adapt is that the quality and fidelity with which we view these sports has changed immensely over the last 30 years, like Austin was saying. So the fans now have a much easier time seeing mistakes made through the human element of the games. It's very much more apparent to them than it was 30 years ago.
Then I don't like it then. Because I've been watching sports. Hold on a minute. I've been watching sports. I've been a huge sports fan. The only reason I have this show is because I didn't go to school to be on the radio, and people probably can hear that when I talk on the radio. But and you're a sports writer, but I mean, I'm a sports fan. That's what I am. Okay? I mean, I've been watching, since I can remember, I've been a big Yankee fan and Giants fan. And that's what I watch. I love it. And so I haven't changed the way I watch games. I don't change I may say, wow, that was a terrible call, or wow, that shouldn't have happened, or oh my God, I can't believe my team lost because of this. I mean, fine, it's something you live with. That's part of being a sports fan. That's the heartbreak of being a sports fan. That's why you fall in love with your teams. If we're going to become robotic and we're going to create this utopic world in the sports world where, you know, nobody's ever going to make a mistake and calls are going to be perfect, you're going to take, first of all, you're going to see pitchers in baseball not be able to pitch in the league anymore.
Yeah.
You're not going to have guys that can, CC Sabathia couldn't compete.
I see that only helping the batters.
Of course. And in football with all this stuff, you're not helping the defense. How is the defense going to be successful?
Right. Oh, it's.
I mean, you can't be
with one or both hands tied behind your back. Defense.
And I look at it this way: this kid Ballantyne that's trying to make the Giants roster, the cornerback that where the flag came out by Adam Gase threw the flag against the Giants kid. And this is a kid trying to make a football team. Looks like he makes a great play, and he didn't make a great play. And somehow somebody upstairs in the Jets box said, "Oh, he kind of grabbed that guy's hand, he might have thrown a flag." And of course, it is a penalty. You can see it. But like it was so minute, it didn't really. Now, but in the rule book, it's a penalty. You got to throw the flag because of that. Like, let the game just play. That's part of being a sports fan. I mean, the heartbreak is part of it, folks.
My biggest issues, and I'm usually the one that tries to talk you off the ledge.
Yeah,
when it comes to officiating, like when you, I believe it was a couple months ago, you came in and it's an epidemic.
Oh,
it's
just
so bad.
That's what I'm saying.
Isn't the epidemic maybe us and the complaining? What kills me isn't always like, because calls go one way or the other, time to time. It's like little stuff. Like, I still remember being like 12 or 13 years old, Michigan playing Michigan State in football, Michigan State's drive and trying to come back. They ended up winning, but like, there was clearly like a timing issue. Like, it was like the longest second that they got to set the ball and spike the ball to get the last play to beat us. And I still remember that.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that kills me.
Sure.
Is like the functional, like the structure of the game can get, tweaked just a little bit of home cooking. And that's the stuff that kills me. Not the officiating.
Or how about the home run by Jeter back in 96, the ball that was the kid knocked, basically took it away from Tarasco's glove in the playoffs, and the Yankees ended up winning the series because of that. I mean, these are moments that, yes, they're unfortunate for the team that it happens, because that's part of sport, right?
Yeah, so the problem, especially with pass interference, is that it's not a black and white call. It's a judgment call. Hand fighting is a part of the position, a part of the sport, and when the line between hand fighting and cheating is very blurred. My question to you, Jeff, is with balls and strikes, you don't believe they should be black and white. You believe it should be a case-to-case basis.
I think it should be in there. You have an umpire behind the plate, and it's their strike zone. and you can, and we can see, and that's what makes, that's why even replaying the game now, you don't see the managers aren't coming out like the old days, the Lou Piniella days.
And I miss that.
And the Earl Weaver days, and you know,
kicking
dirt and getting mad. I mean, you've taken all that away. And the so no, what I'm not saying it's black and white. It's you have an umpire, and maybe the umpire's terrible that day. Maybe he has a horrible day, but that's part of the game.
Exactly. So basically, the point of umpires and of referees is to make the game, parts of the game that are supposed to be black and white, and the parts of the game that are judgment call, the right judgment call.
Yeah.
And that's really hard. But if we turn everything black and white, you're saying that hurts,
it hurts
the quality
the
of the game.
It's going to hurt the quality. Well, first of all, in the NFL, it's going to hurt. You're going to have games that are going to be 600 to 600 because you can't play defense the way the NFL's construed right now. Defensive players were at a huge disadvantage.
Oh, it's been trending that way for 2 decades.
Of course. And now you're going to, and now with this new thing, you're going to make it even harder for them. So what's the point of even spending money on defensive players if that's the way it's going to be?
Yeah. And the day pass interference became a rule in the first place was the day cornerback became one of the hardest positions in sports. And you're going to make it impossible if you,
everything. Isn't the rules in play now, correct? I mean, this is the rule. NFL. So it's already going to be impossible. And in baseball, I mean, it's a strike zone. I mean, look, the guy last night in the Yankee game, we talked about Eric Mullen, was terrible. I mean, it was horrible. It was. And I've seen a guy like Aaron Judge, who's like 6'9", he gets struck out by more balls below his knees. It drives you crazy as a fan, but that's part of the game. That's part of what makes it special.
He's terrible both ways.
Exactly.
Like if he's having a bad day, it's a bad day for both teams.
Exactly. Or the Red Sox had a bad day with an umpire last weekend with the Yankees. The Yankees ended up winning the game. The Yankees got the benefit of a bunch of calls. That's part of the game.
Stop taking that out. At least interesting situations too. Like Brian Johnson should have had zero earned runs yesterday, but a curveball that sort of floated and then fell into the zone at the last second got called a ball, and Pujols gets to come up because that's, you know, fourth ball on what would have been the third strike. He hits a homer, 3 runs. It sort of separates between people who watched the game and people who read the stats line, because people who watched the game know Brian Johnson had a good first inning. People who didn't look at the stat line and say, oh, he gave up 3 runs in the first.
But again, it's about being, it's sport and competing. And when you start to take the human element away from it, it's not going to be compelling anymore. I'm just telling you, like, we are so reactionary as a species. Something bad happens and we got to fix it in me. Like, let's take a deep breath.
Can we revisit this after you guys play CVU in a couple weeks and someone misses an offsides call?
Listen, when it comes to high school officials, I mean it. I get it. Like, that's a thankless job. Those guys do a really good job. I'm talking about the big time sports. I've changed over the years. Maybe against CVU, I won't be changing.
Yeah,
I don't know about that.
All right, take
a quick break. When we come back, it's out left field.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
Robotic strike zones are out in left field for me. Being able to review a pass interference call in the NFL is out in left field for me. But Aaron says he's got something better than that, so let's hear it.
I'm anxious to hear what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff, you're going to love this. A venomous tree-climbing snake escaped from a Bronx Zoo Tuesday night.
Wait, the Bronx Zoo? It's like the Bronx Zoo?
Yeah, there's not multiple Bronx Zoo.
The Bronx Zoo. That's it.
I'm trying to read side-eye because I didn't print this one.
Gotcha. Oh, you didn't print it last night? You're prepping?
No.
Okay.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. I'm struggling today, apparently. Officials there have kept the area open with just one little sign downplaying the danger. A letter-sized sign placed next to the ticket office from Jungle World Wednesday reads, "Dear visitors, a 3.5-foot-long mangrove snake is missing from its exhibit in Jungle World. They are mildly venomous, but not dangerous to people."
Huh.
So, Jeff, you going to that zoo anytime soon?
No. I don't.
You're not going to the Bronx until they catch that thing.
I don't go to pet stores that have snakes. Do you think I'm going to go to the Bronx Zoo and there's a 3-foot venomous snake slithering around? No. Not a chance. Not happening. No way.
You want to keep the snakes in the cages.
Maybe keep the snakes in the jungle. You know what I mean? What's the point of looking at them? If this stuff can happen, what is the point of looking at them in a cage? Let them stay in the jungle.
I was reading a story. I think New York Times had a Q&A long interview with Nick Cage. Weird dude.
You're kidding.
But at some point, he had 2 pet cobras.
Of course he did.
Why? Because you could, I guess. I don't know. But, like, I couldn't live with too, like, cobras are so unsettling. Even as snakes go, when they like unfurl like the hood behind, or whatever that is, the skin behind their head. So
it's
when
not
they
good.
They stand up straight, and it's like, oh god, that is terrifying,
horrible.
It has no arms or legs. How do you let it escape? That's what I want.
Well,
to
know. Because here's the thing about snakes, my man. Like, they can get through very small cracks and things. I mean, it's easy for them to do things.
Plate glass.
They wriggle.
They do weird things. And first, have you ever seen, like, videos of, like, pythons eating, like, deer and stuff? I mean, we're talking, like...
Oh, or anacondas that eat people?
But they open their mouth. Like, they are crazy animals. And I'm just saying, like, leave them in areas where they live. Don't bring them here. You know, I mean, there's no reason for a 3-foot poisonous mangrove snake to be hanging out in the Bronx. What is the point?
Yeah. Snakes eat whole animals
in one bite.
Some people eat, you know,
Hershey's Kisses.
Hershey's Kisses. I was going to say like soft serve ice cream.
We're than that, Austin. They eat these things fast. It's not good.
Like when the anacondas like glom onto like a small deer, like sort of like slowly ingesting it. They don't have teeth. They're not chewing.
No, it's not pretty. And the fact that there's one running around in the Bronx right now is very unsettling to me.
How fast do you think you get here?
I don't know.
I don't think it would get here by winter.
Yeah, yeah. All right, sports.
Maybe
update.
It hitchhikes its way up here and bothers you?
I don't want to. Listen, I mean, look, I have nothing against people. I have, one of my dearest friends had a snake for
years.
What
if I said I got two tickets for you to go to the Yankees?
Then it's not too close to the Bronx Zoo. I'd even think about it. If I knew that snake was loose at Yankee Stadium, no, I wouldn't
You would
go.
Be visibly uncomfortable, like, walking around. Yeah.
If I knew... Listen, if the snake is loose in the Bronx Zoo, of course I'd go to the Bronx. I'm not worried about that. But if I knew that the snake was loose at the Yankee Stadium, not going. I'm out. I'm like, there's no way. I'd be freaking... I'd be sitting in my seat, looking under my seat all the time.
Even if you're behind home plate?
Even worse, those big comfortable chairs, who knows where that thing could be hanging out. And if I was a snake, that's where I'd be going to watch the game anyway, so I wouldn't want to be down there either.
they'd snake the good seats?
Oh, we've killed this segment.
Okay.
You're up, kiddo.
When it comes to sports, one station says it all. WCPV Essex Burlington Plattsburgh. All sports. 101.3. The Game. The Game. Sports trending now.
What's so dangerous about Kevin Durant walking around the Bronx?
What up, everybody? I'm Aaron Wells with your 101.3 The Game sports update. The Boston Red Sox crushed the Angels 16-4 last night. They host the Halos again this afternoon. First pitch is at 4:05, and you can find the coverage starting with the pregame show at 3:05 right here on 101.3 The Game. The Yankees lost to the Blue Jays 8-2 yesterday. They play again in Toronto today. First pitch is at 3:07. The Patriots began their preseason with a 31-3 rout of the Detroit Lions on Thursday, and the Giants defeated the Jets 31-22 in their first game. We'll get into our takeaways from the first week of preseason this hour on Sports Saturday. This 101.3 The Game Sports Update was brought to you by The Archives, a combination arcade and bar that focuses on vintage arcade games, unique craft beers, and creative cocktails located at 191 College Street in downtown Burlington. Now it's time for Hour 2 of Sports Saturday. We are living the dream and taking you with us on 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com, or we are always streaming, so take us anywhere on the 101.3 The Game app.
This is 101.3 The Game. Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I just got a text from my brother. He just told me that happened a few years ago at the Bronx Zoo. A baby cobra got loose. I mean, that's just not a good resume.
But it's a baby. It's cute.
It's not cute. There's nothing cute about
it. They do have
a
track record now of losing
getting loose.
Dangerous animals.
It's not good. I'm not going to that zoo. I'm out. I've been to that zoo, too. I went when I was a kid. But I'm not going now. You got to find those snakes. And you got to learn from your first mistake. You got to seal that up. You can't let it out. You got to do everything you can not to let that stuff happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for business to have a poison snake rolling around.
No.
It's crazy. You're listening to Sports Saturday here. See, I get all fired up. You talk about snakes. I just loathe them. I know they're important for the ecosystem, and I get all that. They're part of the world, but I am not a big fan. 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. Jeff Paul here. My buddy Austin Danforth. Aaron Wells. The three of us are back together again. It's been a while. I do have to say about our buddies at Vermont Engine Service Incorporated. They've been in business since 1985, located at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston, 802-863-2326. You can visit them at www.vermontengine.com or on Facebook. Their hours of operation are 7 to 7:30 to 5, Monday through Friday. And Saturdays, they're open 8 to noon. They're an engine machine shop. They do engine rebuilding, boring and honing of cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, turn brake drums and rotors, and flywheel resurfacing. They sell mowers, Dixie choppers, and Grasshopper Zero Turn mowers. Go check them out. Our good friends at Vermont Engine Service, like I said, 802-863-2326, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. NFL preseason started. Pretty exciting stuff. People love that the NFL's back. I'm a huge NFL fan, Austin. You know that.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit salty about the preseason starting because I know what happens when the preseason starts. Winter's coming. And I, as much as I dislike snakes, I dislike winter even that much more. I must sound like a real downer today.
But I mean, you're going up and down.
I'm all
like
over the
wildly.
Place. I'm all over the place today. But I will say that it started. There's been some overreactions, some reactions. Let's start with your Patriots. Patriots open up with just a scintillating win over the Detroit Lions.
Was it 31-3?
Yeah,
it's typical, it means so much.
Typical
too.
Patriot way.
To a lesser extent than baseball, which sure. I follow much more at the end of the season.
Sure.
As a Patriots fan, you need to pace yourself because the season's just longer for you. So you can't get all, go whole hog on, week one, two, three, the preseason.
Yeah.
You let the boys play. They'll get, coach will coach them up and you'll get to game four. Okay, we'll tune in for a couple series, see what's going on, and then put the lights on week one and we'll go because, you're probably going to be looking at February by the time you're done watching football.
Isn't life good for you?
Some days.
I'm actually I'm so starved for football by the beginning of preseason.
Really?
And I'm such a hungry free agency watcher as a Pats fan that I usually religiously watch the first preseason game. I forgot it was happening on Thursday though and missed it and I was very disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody wants to see their team play for the first time. I mean, the Giants for me got blacked out because I have DirecTV, Fox 4, I don't know what's going on with 44, and then they blacked it out on the NFL Network where it was supposed to be, so I was frustrated. But, I think if you're the Patriots, I've been reading some things about they don't have enough talent. I mean, where did Curran write, this week? Do you have that sound? Are we going to play it later on? I don't want to jump all over you here, kiddo.
We're going to play it later on. I don't have it up at the moment. Tommy Curran basically said that Tom Brady's going to fall off this year.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, listen, please, spare me without, and we're going to move on from the Patriots second because the Patriots are the Patriots. Okay? I mean, who is going to predict, who can predict that he's going to fall off the face of the earth? How many years have we been, have anybody been on the air, on TV, for the last 10 years and has said, this is it for the Patriots? They've said it mid-season for the New England Patriots. Tom Brady can't do it anymore. He's not mobile enough. He's not accurate enough. His arm isn't strong enough. This team doesn't have what it takes. The game's past Bill Belichick. Please, just stop. Just stop. Until I see tangible evidence that the New England Patriots are not the elite team in the NFL, then I will continue to tell everybody they are the elite team in the NFL. Simple. I'm not a Pats fan. I'm not a Pats homer. I'm not anything. I'm just a realist.
You can figure out or predict when he's going to drop off because it's when Belichick is going to hit the eject button.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be playing for the Patriots anymore.
I mean, just enough is enough. I mean, this team is what they have done in the last 19, 20 years is absolutely unheard of in a game and in a league that has such parity. And if so, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't have thought that when Seattle won their first Super Bowl, that wasn't going to be the next dynasty, right? When you looked at that team, they had a young, vibrant defense, elite quarterback, great running back, unbelievable wide receivers. They're flashing the pan. 1 year, that's it. And look at these Patriots.
We can move on from the Patriots, but Patriots adjacent anyway.
Yeah.
Did you see the listing for Tom and Giselle's home?
No.
It's off of it's off a hole at the country club in Brookline. I think they're asking $39.5 million.
Oh, it's a steal.
And you can only get to look at it by proving basically you have enough money to possibly buy the house.
Yeah. I mean, well, good. It's good to be Tom.
It looks like a lovely spot.
I mean, it's good to be Tom. I mean, listen, Tom Brady is one of those guys. It's good to be him. I mean, good for him.
But I think you wanted to talk more preseason stuff other than Patriots.
I'm just saying. I mean, I've been reading a bunch this week, and people are, the Patriots aren't enough this and enough that. The wide receivers aren't good enough. What are they going to do here? What are they going to do there? To me, I think this team is loaded again. I look at this football team.
I think,
how can you not like it? How can you not? So just relax, Patriot fans, even though most of you are. Most of you know. You just know. It's like it's all the people that don't know that say this stuff. But you just know. They'll be fine. But let's talk about my Giants, shall we? First of all, the Jets look pretty good. Got to give the Jets some credit. I think they're going to be a better football team.
Okay.
Nice first drive. Yeah, it doesn't
matter. I'll believe it when I see it.
I agree, but I mean, nice first drive. Again, if you look at this team on paper, you got to like what you see if you're the Jets. I'm not sold on them yet. We'll see. No. I think a lot of people in the media think the Jets are about the ones to make the next step. That's going to be the next team in the AFC that could potentially compete with the Patriots or compete for a playoff position. I'm not sold on Darnold yet. I'm just not. I know everyone thinks the Giants made a huge mistake not drafting him. I don't know what you see that makes you think they shouldn't have signed Saquon Barkley. I know that the game is a passing game, but if you look at Dallas without Zeke Elliott.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not the same team without Zeke Elliott. If you have an elite runner, you're going to be successful. The Giants have an elite runner in Saquon Barkley, and if he stays healthy, he could be one of the best that's ever played the game, just based on what you saw as rookie year.
Yeah,
How can you not think that?
And even if it's a pass-centric league and you take out all of his rushes, Saquon Barkley was still the drive behind their passing game last year.
No question.
Too.
Very good point. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, again, I'm not quite sure with Darnold yet. I'm not sure. Hopefully it works out for the Jets. I get that. You've now got Bell as your running back, another one of the elite guys.
I forgot. I did forget about that.
Yeah, the defense is going to be much improved. They're going to be a competitive football team, there's no question. But I think the takeaway in the Jets-Giants game is Daniel Jones. And I'm only saying this, and again, this is not an overreaction here, because I know people are going to say, I mean, I read it on Twitter, because so many people got so upset the Giants drafted him and were making fun of the Giants so much that they have to say negative things, because if they don't, they got to eat a whole bowl of crow. And I will just say that I believed in it when he signed him. I love what Gettleman's done with this football team. But what you saw in that one drive he had against the Jets was something you have not seen out of Eli Manning in 7 or 8 years. A guy that was poised in the pocket. A guy that made all the throws. A guy that the Giants actually sort of scored a touchdown in the first half of a preseason game. Someone find me the stat on last time that happened.
Eli could look pretty good if he played the Jets' second string, too.
No, I disagree with you completely.
Okay, it's not about the stats and it's not about the performance. It's about the fact that Daniel Jones' confidence and his poise, his decisiveness, are something we haven't seen from Eli in his entire career.
And let me say this about whether it's second team, first team, whatever, fine. You want to downplay it as that, and I'm not making a big deal out of one drive, but the throws were good throws. These weren't guys running wide open down the field and they were just lofted up or a missed tackle and something happened. These are big-time throws made by a much maligned kid, a kid that came in that had so... Think of the pressure this kid had going into this game. The whole city of New York, he can't stand him because of the way the media's portrayed this draft. You know, that he's looked at as this guy stinks, he's a terrible player, and he comes out and does something like that. If I'm the New York Giants today... How they do not have a quarterback controversy or a little bit where, or at least a competition for this with where the Giants are, to me is crazy for the organization. Mm. It really is.
The stones it takes to be the Giants first round pick, go to a Yankees game and get booed by all of New York.
Yeah, what's up with that?
And then show up to your first game and be poised and confident, even though the whole city seems to hate you. And that's a good start for a young quarterback.
And let me just say, they don't hate him. It's just the way he's been portrayed. And because, of course, we're all like, you know, all these minions that just listen to what these quote-unquote experts say all the time. Oh, well, Mike Francesa doesn't like it, so gotta not like
says.
It. You know, Michael Kay doesn't like it. So, I mean, whoever these guys are, you know, you listen to the quote-unquote experts on the NFL Network that just, oh my God, they're laughing at the Giants with this draft pick. I agree with you. For that kid, not only to have the stones to do it, to be as professional as he was after he did it. Wasn't pumping his chest, just shook hands, went off the field, and did a good job for the day. But where the Giants are as an organization, how you're not thinking about, you know what? And if you're Eli Manning today, like, look, I've been an Eli Manning, you know, I've been a critic of him for a long time as a big Giant fan. I appreciate what he's done as a Giant. 2 Super Bowl championships, arguably 2 of the most epic throws in the history of the NFL were made by Eli Manning against the Patriots, against 2 epic teams. You can't take it away from him. But he's been an average quarterback for a long time. You can't debate it. If I'm Eli Manning today, what are you doing to the Giants organization? Even if you know what I mean, like there's a point in time where I know you want to keep playing, but you got this kid here. I mean, I remember when he was the kid, and Kurt Warner had the Giants at 5-2,
right?
And Tom Coughlin said, you know what, like, we're gonna have this kid play. And the Giants ended up being like 5-11. They didn't play very well, but they basically said, you know, we're gonna let him go now. And Kurt Warner ended up going to a Super Bowl with Arizona. He's a good quarterback.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when do you say, if you're Eli Manning, just realistically look in the mirror and say, you know what? Maybe it's just time. You've done it all, buddy. You've won MVP awards in the Super Bowl. You've won two Super Bowls. You've been the king of New York. I mean, you and Derek Jeter were it for a long time.
Right.
Like, when do you say, you know what? Maybe it's time. When can the organization say that? Because I think this team right now, with a guy that can stand in the pocket, can make the throws, with this offensive line, I think they have plenty of weapons on offense. When they're healthy, I get it. This team can make a run. Let's listen to what Paul Schwartz said, writer for New York Daily News.
I believe that they feel that they're a team on the uptick, that they're a young team. They are a young team. It's not a belief. I mean, the defensive backfield is incredibly young. Daniel Jones is the quarterback of the future. We'll see where that future arrives. So I think outside people looking at them as no better than a third place team. And the only reason they're not a fourth place team is people don't have much regard for the Redskins. Most people don't think they're a contender in any way, shape, or form. I think they could sneak into the picture if a lot of things go well. And that's the problem with Giants is you can make a case that they can win 8-9 games. You definitely can, but you have to list about 5 or 6 things that have to go well that aren't proven, that could go well, but that have to go well. And that's a slippery slope.
I agree with everything he said, except I don't believe in Dallas. I don't believe in Philly. And I don't believe in Washington. I don't think any of those football teams are elite. And I think the Giants, realistically speaking, if their offensive line holds up with the weapons they have, they stay healthy. And some things can go right for them. This is a team that can push for the NFC East Championship. I'm not talking Super Bowl, but I'm talking NFC East Championship. None of those teams in that division are elite. They have a shot here.
Right. Although, you say that, and I feel like I heard someone saying, like, the Cowboys are someone's sexy pick for, like, Super Bowl champs, or like,
yeah, I read that. Like, what? I mean, who are these people?
Like, Jason Garrett's still the coach.
The point.
All they've got on offense right now for Dallas is Zeke, and Zeke has made it clear he will not be running to the ground again unless he gets his money. And if Dallas isn't going to pay him his money, then there's going to be no offense.
Right.
Okay. We just got a text. Let me just read it. It's an unnamed. He says, "Yeah, and Matt Castle won 11 games against starters, but where is he now? How about Jacoby Brissett? You are putting way too much stock in one preseason game against players that are 53. Okay. Fair enough. But that's not what it's about. But we're not talking about who he's doing it against. Go ahead.
We're not talking about the performance either, folks. We're talking about decisiveness and confidence from a young quarterback. That's where it starts. And then obviously the accuracy is good to see. The throws have to get made against starters. He's got to make the right reads against starters. But guys who don't start with decisiveness and accuracy ends up being those 32 names on the back of the Browns jersey.
Right. Yeah.
And then the other one's giving us a little mock thing about ifs. Yeah, fair enough. But where the Giants organization is today, we're not talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, or we're talking about the New England Patriots, or a team that's expected to be successful. We're talking about an organization that's trying to get back to being successful. And what is, if you can get this kid out there right now and give him the job, see what happens. I mean, the problem the Giants have is Eli's ego, I think. They don't want to hurt it. Eli's a good man. He really is. I mean, I don't think he's a great player. I didn't think he was ever a great player. He's a good man. He's a good pro. And he's been a great Giant.
Yeah.
And I think he's arguably, some people may think he should be a Hall of Famer. Maybe he should. That's not my vote. I don't think so, but that's not my thing.
Yeah.
As a Giant fan, I appreciate what he's done. But we're not talking, we are talking about ifs. But the ifs outweigh what you have right now. And if you have an opportunity to give this kid a job, let him do it.
I don't think you throw him right in right away. I don't think you go sink or swim. I think the Giants have taken the right tact here, where Eli's the quarterback as long as we're in playoff contention. So like once they play themselves in or out of contention, like where the playoffs are no longer a possibility, that's the perfect time to throw Jones in. Give him some real reps. Or if they need a change of pace, like if they start 0-5, change of pace. Okay, let's see what we can do with the other kid.
Rams fan Ralph just said, I wonder if 2 years from now you're having the same conversation about Brady. Brady's a whole different animal, I think, than Eli Manning. I just do. And I think the Patriots are in a whole different world than where the Giants are. And I agree with the situation where you say, okay, let's start the season with Eli, and if they're out of the playoff contention, you make the switch. But to me, I think they have a better chance to make the playoffs with this kid. I mean, just the first series I saw Eli play the other day is the same Eli. Missing guys, arm strength's not great. It's just time. I mean, it catches up to everybody, and Eli's never been an elite player anyway.
We could, and that could be the case. We could get to week 2 and see that and be like, oh yeah, Eli just doesn't have it. Then they make the change.
Maybe that's the case. But to me, where the Giants are today, with where the expectation is, this is the perfect time to do it. This is the time to do it. And if I was Eli, honestly, I mean, again, I'm not trying to get in his mind. He's a great man. He's been a great pro. He's been a good, great
Giant.
We
know he listens. We know he listens.
Well, I mean, I know, but I don't, regardless, I don't want to listen. I mean, there's too many people out there that just rip people down for no reason. What I'm just saying is, to me, Eli Manning, it might be the time you say, you know what? Maybe it is time. Maybe it's time for me to say, you know what? Here's the job. Whether you want to be his backup this year, you want to stay on and be his mentor, maybe that's the way you go. But it's this kid's job now, and we're trying to get this organization back. If you love the organization and you want the best for it, sometimes you got to make a tough decision. Eli should make that decision today. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Mets. How about those Amazons? Huh? Half game out of the playoffs. Big win last night. Don't go anywhere. Talk to Matt Ehalt of Yahoo Sports. Don't go anywhere.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
About a month ago, we had this gentleman on to talk about the Mets, and we were thinking they were going the other direction. We were talking about what they were going to do in terms of maybe trading some of their bigger names away. We talked about what the decisions they made in the offseason to put this team together and where their future was. And now it looks like they're world beaters.
14 out of the last 15.
Unbelievable. They've leapfrogged like 9 teams. They're a half a game out of the wild card. And actually, they put themselves in position in the National League East as well. It's just unbelievable what they've been doing. So we're going to talk again to our good friend from Yahoo Sports, Mets insider Matt Ehalt. Good morning, Matt. How are you today, buddy?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
So, Matt, I mean, listen, we talked to you about a month ago, and, you know, it's kind of gloomy, you know, for the Mets. But now all of a sudden they're the hottest ticket in New York City. What's going on?
They can't lose. It's incredible. I mean, they're down in their final 3 outs last night, and they rally against one of the best closers in baseball for 4 runs. I mean, it's simply incredible. You thought that game was done. I mean, if you remember the top of the inning, they gave up a run because they basically didn't cover the plate on a ball in the dirt. And then they rallied like they did. I mean, they have Doolittle's number this year. It's absolutely incredible.
Now, there was a lot made when they signed Stroman. I mean, there were a lot of eyebrows that went up because it was like, wait, the Mets are buying. And, you know, and I know that Brody Van Wagenen got a lot of, you know, took a lot of heat. But do you think when you look at this team, the way it's constructed with the offseason moves that they made, that he realizes that, hey, the National League is kind of ripe for the taking in terms of the wild card. There's not a lot of great teams and we're not really built for the future, that we better load up here and try to make a run at it this year because this team really is a win now team?
I think somewhat. I think he saw an opportunity to maybe get a guy at a little bit of a lower price. But, I mean, they were still – I mean, listen, the odds are still not great that they make the playoffs. I mean, they are rising, according to Fangraphs. They're as high as they've been in a while. But, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what their long-term was because it didn't really seem they were willing to move anybody else. And, you know, that's a move that could come back to bite them at some point if they lose some of these guys. So, you know, I do think they saw a guy that they thought could help down the road a little bit, certainly. And I mean, the one thing is Stroman hasn't been all that great. I mean, right. His 2 starts, they both, you know, he would be 0-2, but they've taken him off the hook each time.
So this run these last 2 weeks, where's this coming from?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're playing much better.
Are they drinking different water?
This team isn't this good, but I mean, they're confident. I mean, certainly that's one thing. And you know, I mean, the schedule obviously helped a little bit. And then, you know, hey, they're just nothing is like going against them right now. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you look last night at the way it started. It was with a little ground ball down the third baseline. It had a expected batting average of 0.70. I mean, it's incredible just right now how everything is coming up Mets. And, you know that was a big win last night. Now, you know, they have Syndergaard and DeGrom going the next 2 days. I mean, they have some real chance to do some damage here against the Nationals the next 2 days.
Yeah, Matt, and I don't see how you can't feel that this team has, I mean, I know that whatever Fangraphs says, but I mean, I know their schedule is going to get a lot better, but this team they're talented. I mean, when you look at their roster up and down and you just mentioned they got Syndergaard and DeGrom going. Marcus Stroman obviously is, I mean, he had a 3 ERA in the American League and you can't discredit that in the American League East especially. I mean, this is a team that if they get in could be fairly dangerous.
Yeah, they could. I mean, the problem is going to be if they get in, they're going to have the wild card, they're going to pitch DeGrom, and then you got to go play the Dodgers when you're going to have DeGrom in one start. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, could they be dangerous? Yes. I mean, certainly they have the pieces too. But, I mean, one thing I think you got to see over the next 2 weeks is, can Syndergaard keep this going against some better lineups? I mean, you look at the teams he's been facing recently. They're not exactly world beaters. So, I mean, certainly, you know, Wheeler, the same thing. They're going to be facing some better lineups during the stretch. So, I mean, you know, the Mets are going to have their chance, certainly. I mean, they're a team, if they get in, they can be dangerous. But, you know, I mean, obviously a lot can change between now and the end of the season.
Isn't it amazing, Austin, we talked to writers for the Mets, it's never, you know, you definitely have your guard up here a little bit with this team. Even fans are here, Matt, we've been getting texts on our text line that Mets fans are still like, ah, it's smoke and mirrors. But when I look at this team on paper, and I know the Dodgers have played great baseball, but think of the pressure the Dodgers are going to have on them when they get to this playoff. You know, they have to win this year, right? I mean, there's a lot of pressure on them. The Mets can go into this if it happens, and I know we got a long way to go, but if they were to get in and win the wild card game and then end up playing the Dodgers, think of the pressure that's on the Dodgers to win against the Mets, and the Mets are going to be playing with house money.
I guess I just think the Dodgers are just so much better than everybody else in the National League. I mean, they're deeper. The lineup is more, formidable. I don't know. I think the Dodger team that I don't know. I don't feel this is like they've made it two straight years. I don't feel like getting out of the first round is going to be I don't know. Maybe it's the World Series. Yeah. I could see that. I'm not so sure. I just think they're better than everybody else, and I don't think it's necessarily close. I really don't think anybody else in the National League is even on the same playing field as them.
It's wild to look at the standings. I mean, you got them, they're 77-41. The Braves are 69-49. And then basically everybody else, it's 10 teams that have pretty much, if not identical, like just very, very close. It almost doesn't make sense to that these standings are so tight.
A lot of the National League is just mediocre, to be honest. I mean, the Mets included. I mean, you look at the American League. The American League is so top-heavy. The National League is just a lot of teams that have flaws. I mean, right, if you look from top to bottom here, I mean, obviously, you know, the Mets have some flaws. Their bullpen, you know, can be a little shaky. I mean, you saw last night, it was not great. The Nationals' pitch obviously can be shaky. The Phillies lineup is super inconsistent. The Cardinals don't have great starting pitching. The Brewers pitching is off. Like, you have a lot of teams here. I mean, I'm pretty sure, and I could be wrong on this, don't hold me to it, but last I checked, it's like I think every team in the National League outside of the Braves and the Dodgers wouldn't even be in the playoff hunt in the American League. So, I mean, it kind of just shows you. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
There's a lot more parity in the National League. But there is, you know, I mean, sometimes that's more just based out of mediocrity.
Matt, organizationally, where is this team? I mean, I mentioned earlier that I look at this roster and I look at what they did in the offseason, trading away some of their prospects that were higher tiered to get Cano and to get Diaz. And then you look at what they did to get Stroman the last couple of weeks ago. I mean, organizationally now, do you look at this team as they're a win now team? They're a team that's window is here if they're going to ever do it, or is this an organization that's in a pretty good place going forward into the future?
No, they have to win now. Yeah. I mean, they've gutted their farm system. Some of these guys are headed towards free agency rather soon. No, they gotta win now. They are not set up for the long haul. I mean, that's going to be the thing too. Is, I mean, if all this is, they're making all these moves, but they got to start winning soon.
What do they? Okay, so what happens? So Mets in the future, like, give us an what are the Mets in 2 years? I mean, like, I mean, this is a great run by the Mets, but if you're a Mets fan today, you're excited. But when you think about the Mets, I'm not trying to compare them what the LA Lakers are today, but I think of what the Lakers are going to be when LeBron and these guys leave in a couple years. They're going to be pretty bad. I mean, are the Mets one of those teams that, boy, if they don't get this thing done with an aging Syndergaard and aging DeGrom and is this their time? I mean, in 2 years, 3 years, this is going to be an ugly situation in Flushing.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if you look at their roster, Syndergaard is probably traded or he can leave in free agency after the 2021 season. Same with Conforto, same with Matz. Wheeler can be gone at the end of this year. Stroman can be gone at the end of next year. You know, they really don't have any pitching depth in the system. They've traded two of their top guys, so those guys, they don't really have the guys to come up. Then you look beyond that. In 2 years, DeGrom's going to be 33. They're going to have Robinson Cano in his age 38 season by then. I mean, you don't even know if he'll even be anything remotely passable as a player by then. You know, Ramos, their starting catcher, could be gone in a year, and Nito is not really a starting catcher type. I mean, so if you look at the roster and some of these guys, I mean, you know, they do have some young players, right? Like Rosario is a young guy. Pete Alonso, Jeff yeah. McNeil. There are some guys, but when you look around the rest of it, yeah, I mean, most of their guys are going to be old or gone but in 2 years.
But my guess is that you're going to see a lot of, if they don't win, I mean, next year is going to be one of those years we have to make decisions about trading guys because you're going to lose them in free agency potentially.
Yeah, I mean, and you could see that this offseason. I mean, I totally think I could totally see them in the next year trading, you know, Syndergaard. I think Syndergaard is very, I wouldn't feel too comfortable if I'm him. I think the only reason he didn't get traded this a few weeks ago is, frankly, because the Mets, talking to people from other teams, were like, they basically felt the Mets were just being completely unrealistic in what they were asking for, that they were just asking for the moon on everybody, and it wasn't really a thing of, like, were they actually looking to make a deal, or were they just trying to fleece people?
How electric was Citi Field last night?
It was a great atmosphere. It was really a playoff-like atmosphere. I got to say, that was a fun August game. You know, you can't always say that about August baseball, but that was a legit fun game, you know, last night. And you know, the Mets players and Mickey Callaway, they all brought it up after the game, how exciting an atmosphere that was for them.
Is Mickey off the hot seat now?
For now, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, which is funny because I don't think there are a lot of Mets fans who are big fans of his, but I mean, if they keep winning, I don't know how you don't bring him back next year. But no, I mean, it's right now there's no talk of his job security. Although an interesting thing is his team took him off the hook last night. If you remember that seventh inning, he handled kind of odd with not bringing in Lugo, going with Wilson and gives up the game. Like, that wasn't even discussed after the game because of how they won. And one thing that's going to get highlighted here is Mickey Callaway's in-game decisions trying to manage a playoff team.
Matt, if you could predict it, and I'm going to let you go after this, did the Mets make the playoffs?
I'm still going to say no, but I'll tell you what, I give it much more of a chance than I would have, obviously, 2 weeks ago, where I thought there was no chance in hell they would. I still think the Nationals are a better team last night, notwithstanding, and I think one of the other teams might get it. I still feel like the Mets are like an 83-85 win team. So I didn't predict them to make it before the season, so I'm going to stick with my prediction.
Matt Ehel, the Yahoo Sports. Thanks for the time, buddy. We'll talk to you again down the road.
No problem. Have a good one.
All right, you too. I say it all the time. It's like Mets fans and Mets, there's just no...
They're conditioned.
They just are conditioned to know that it's coming. I mean, I think Red Sox fans are probably there back before 2004.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it had to be.
Most of them are so conditioned, they're still like that. Rich still is convinced every year that they're going to make it to the first round and get crushed.
I think that's more a Rich thing than...
Yeah. But to me, when I look at the Mets on it with all seriousness, I look at this rotation that they boast, this lineup that they have. I know there's real questions in the bullpen, but they do have some power arms down there. They've got to be. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to do it. There's a lot of teams that still are going to have a say in it, and then Mets have a tougher schedule going down the stretch. But why not?
They could drop off slightly from the last 2 weeks
and still be okay,
and they'd be on track to probably make the playoffs.
And you got Syndergaard and Grom going tonight off that win. I mean, that's momentum in itself. Citi Field's going to be rocking. I'm telling you. I mean, and if they get in, and this is all ifs, and obviously we've been getting texts saying that we do a lot of ifs around here, but what else are we supposed to do? This is reality. If they get in with this rotation and that kind of momentum going in,
yeah,
and you cannot tell me that the Los Angeles Dodgers are not going to be feeling it going into the playoffs. Like, I don't care what. The Dodgers have to win this year or there's big problems in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that pressure to have the Mets roll in there and have to do that and then have to come into New York and have to play a couple games, I'm telling you.
You could have the Dodgers, they're going to be 100-whatever win team.
Yes.
They're probably going to be playing a team that might have, 88 wins.
And how many times have we seen teams do that? Go in, you know, wild card teams have to play 162 games to win.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about a team that's got to grind the whole season than a team that just runs away with it early.
Right.
Usually those teams struggle in the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see what happens if these Mets get in and have to play the Dodgers. All right. Quick break. And when we come back, it's hot or not. Don't go anywhere.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's hot or not on 101.3 The Game.
When Nelly starts playing, Aaron starts reading. Go ahead.
This is Hot or Not, thanks to Superb Cupcakes.
Hot or Not, my shirt. We like my flamingo shirt?
I noticed that.
I don't know if it's anything yet.
Did that come back with you from the Keys?
No, I've had this one. This one, I bought this at the Gap in Glens Falls, you know, that like...
Yeah, Aviation Mall.
No.
Oh, the factory outlet?
The factory outlet.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a little classic I found a couple years ago. I just found it in my class. I figured you'd like this one, Austin.
I do. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, you didn't say anything, so I was a little salty about that.
Definitely hot.
Thank you. All right, go on.
Well, Hot or Not is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They never disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes that are made from scratch daily. There's no box mix at Superb. Make your day Superb.
If you seriously, we say it every week, but do it. Go see Hannah and Joe. They are the best. The couple that owns this cupcake shop, they do it all by themselves. They work incredibly hard. They are a perfect example of what working hard for something is all about. They've built this beautiful business. I think they're 7 or 8 years old now. It's really great. Taft Corner Shopping Center, check them out. And they are Superb Cupcakes. And we've talked about that many times. They are the best. Can't stop eating them.
And if you want some pizza, I hear there's a good pizza place over there,
right around back. You get, you know, come there later. But
dinner and dessert.
Exactly. Dessert, then dinner. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that either, you know.
Fair enough.
Exactly. Hot or not on that?
Whew. The Raiders will take the helmet fine to appease Antonio Brown. So I'll preface this for
Please
those
do.
Who don't know. Antonio Brown has decided he will not play football again unless he is allowed to wear his classic helmet. This is the same helmet Tom Brady wears and that Aaron Rodgers wears. It's like the Riddell R2 or something like that. It's the classic helmet. It's the one that they all used to wear.
Right.
And Antonio Brown really wants to wear it. You're not allowed to anymore. The NFL will fine any team who allows their players to wear the old style helmets because they're less safe. So basically the Raiders have to decide between potentially, I think the worst you can lose is a draft pick for this, which
really?
Is a lot. It's a lot. They have to choose between that and Antonio Brown walking out on them, supposedly.
I mean, here we go. So the question is, will the Raiders take the fine? Probably. So, I mean, I don't know. I would say not. I would tell Antonio Brown to sew it up and wear the helmet they give you. You know, the NFL's taking so much heat for this problem, right? You know, with all these concussion issues,
right.
You have guys coming. Is it CTE? It's got to want to say the CTE problem. So here's the NFL trying to help the problem. So here they are trying to help the problem. And here's Antonio Brown. Typical as the one of the elite wide receivers in the NFL, the prima donna wide receiver, he and his boy Odell Beckham Jr., all you know, got to complain about something. Here's a Raiders organization that's trying to figure this thing out. They give you a whole lot of money, and before you play, you're going to whine about not playing because of your helmet? What are we teaching kids?
Someone said yesterday on the text line that he's the kind of guy who would complain about not being able to wear his old helmet and then get hurt and complain about the lack of safety.
They should stop talking. Yeah. This shouldn't even be a story. You know, look, just wear the helmet. It's what we give you. Wear the helmet.
If it's down to him not playing or them paying the fine, they're going to pay the fine.
I would just say, I'd rather save the money and say, don't play. I'm not going to pay you. What was his contract? What's his contract? Like $16 million to 90, 20? What is it? What million is
Probably
it?
Probably too much to deal with this crap.
Exactly. If I was a Raiders, I'd be like, whatever. Don't play. We're just not going to pay you.
Yeah.
Fine with me. We're not going anywhere anyway. We just want to go to Las Vegas,
the
buddy.
Difference between Antonio Brown and Tom Brady, Brady is grandfathered in because that was like, he... Right.
It used to be that you were grandfathered, but you're no longer.
Okay,
Brady and Aaron Rodgers have both simply relinquished control. They're allowing this rule to go into effect. They're going to wear the new helmets. And, you know, they're two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. They're going to be they're going to give in. And Antonio Brown, who has not done enough in his career to be on their level, is not going to give in. He's going to complain his way through.
Right. Just don't pay him. Hey, Raiders, just don't pay him. Fair enough. Don't want to wear the helmet. Can't play. Okay, you can't play. You're not going to play. We're not going to give you any money. He'll wear the helmet.
It's the most idiotic holdout I've ever heard of in my life. I'm just going to say that.
Jim from Essex just put on the text line, said Antonio Brown just doesn't want to play anymore.
I did hear the hot take that he's doing this to cover up for the fact that his foot injury is going to be bigger than it seems.
Well, who knows?
Did you see those feet?
I haven't seen anybody's feet.
Okay, so he did cryotherapy.
Did he have some beat feet?
He had another attire issue. He didn't want to wear the correct foot protection in his cryotherapy session, and he freezer burned his feet.
Ooh, that's trouble. You want to do that?
Dude's just making a clown of himself.
For a guy that likes to run around, you can't be having frostbit feet.
No.
It's not good for business.
So dumb. It's just, seriously? Anyway, Tom Brady will struggle this year. I will get the sound up here in a second, and after I stop making mistakes. Tom E. Curran says Tom Brady's going to have a rough year this year, and here's why.
So Brady right now is coming off a year where he was surrounded by not a lot of offensive talent. Since then, he's lost his left tackle and his tight end, and there's been no viable replacement put in place. So do you think Tom Brady's going to have a better statistical year in 2019 than he did in 2018? No, I don't either. So when Brady sits down at the table on the eve of his 43-year-old season and says to the Patriots, let's see what we can do about bringing me in line with Drew Brees or some of the, or maybe even Jimmy Garoppolo, are the Patriots going to give him $25 or $27 million or $30 million? No.
So, I mean, so two things. Tom Brady will struggle this year. I'm just going to laugh at that. Not. He's Tom Brady. And yeah, they're going to be fine. There's two things there, though. But when he wants the money, which I don't know if that's Tom Brady's M.O. He hasn't asked. He's been taking pay cuts forever.
And this is the first time he's gotten that $20-plus million dollar salary.
I mean, that's two different questions. Will the Patriots do that? Probably not. Yeah. That's not the Patriot way. But will he be struggling this year? I have to laugh. It must have been a rough week in Boston sports to be talking about this. You think Tom Brady's going to struggle? Oh, he doesn't have the weapons. How many times have we heard this about the Patriots? Seriously. Come on.
Basically yearly since 2010.
Yeah. I mean, it's
right.
Even mid-year, you'll hear, oh, he's not good enough anymore.
Oh, when we lose week two and, oh, sky's falling in.
Oh, my God.
This roster is worse than last year, but I don't think it's the worst one he's played with, especially not in the latter half of his career.
He's going to be just fine.
Yeah, he's going to be fine. Daniel Jones can play his way into the week one starting role.
No, he can't. They got, unless Eli gets hurt falling down the stairs,
I mean, I'm going to say not as well because it's not what their plan is. We know that the way the Giants have treated Eli Manning, I mean, they treat him like royalty. They don't want to hurt his feelings.
They have a plan, and the plan is not
fair Eli. Enough. But I think the plan should be give this kid the job. I mean, I really would, or at least let them compete for the job. Maybe that would be the best for Eli Manning to have some competition. Make it a competition, because I'm telling you right now, where the Giants are today, it would benefit them to give this kid the job. It just would. You're just wasting another year if you just, even if you do it halfway through. I mean, you know this kid's going to be the next guy. Mm. Give him the job.
All right. The Browns are too immature. This is from Danny Cannell this week.
It's an extremely immature team. Now, if everything goes great, they'll be awesome. Like, you know, if they can play like they did last night, you won't hear a peep out of anybody. There's a ball spread around. It's great. But what happens, Doug, when they lose two games in a row? Or Baker Mayfield throws four picks? Or Odell Beckham has zero receptions and only two targets? What happens then is the big question mark for me. If they're able to handle it, they'll be fine. If some of these personality quirks show up, then it could be a disaster in the making.
Hot. I mean, that's exactly, you have Baker Mayfield, who's a polarizing personality. He's going to be he wants to be the leader of that team. He's a heart and soul. He wants to be Mr. Cleveland. And you got Odell Beckham Jr. that just thinks about himself. And until someone shows me, or Odell Beckham Jr. shows me, that he can be a professional and be a winner, they're going to have a big problem there. And he's absolutely right. When things are going well, things are going to be fine. But there's going to be moments this season where the Browns will struggle, where Baker Mayfield will struggle, and Odell will struggle. When that happens, you're going to see the metal hit the road there, buddy. And I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be good for the Browns.
Yeah, adversity, like that sort of thing, you see it in all walks of life, all True. Sports, you know, all levels. Like, good teams can roll with that stuff. Lesser teams don't.
Odell is still mad he's not in New York. I mean, he still talks about the Giants. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. screwed it up. If you can't be successful in New York with that skill set, with what the Giants brand brings, whether they're good or bad, and you can't do it there and they trade you, it's over. You're going to be a great player. You're going to do some highlight things. You're going to probably make Pro Bowls, but the guy's not a winner. And for an organization like Cleveland, they are really rolling the dice, bringing in a guy like Beckham, because I think that organization was coming. But you bring in a guy like Beckham, I'm going to tell you, he's got to change immensely for them to be successful.
Mm. Beckham specifically is far too immature, but the team as a whole is very young and they all have growing up to do. If they handle adversity well, then they'll do fine.
But let me just say this. Yes, I agree with you completely. And I think that they have everything in place before Beckham to go make a run at least be next level playoff steps. I mean, last year, if they had a field goal kicker, they would have made the playoffs.
Right.
This is a team that's up and coming. You put that kind of personality into that locker room, that young personality, the new coach, all those pieces. And Odell Beckham Jr. still hasn't shown anything. This whole offseason, he's been Odell Beckham Jr. Nothing's changed. I'm telling you, it's big problems for Cleveland. I feel bad about that because I want to root for them.
It might be the worst possible landing place for his personality.
Agreed.
The Mets are in a better spot as an organization than the Red Sox.
Ooh, that is juicy. Are we talking like for the season or as a like as a whole? That's okay. No. After talking with Matt, I last two segments ago,
yep.
I don't think they are in a better position. I think just as many of those key pieces that have the Mets competitive currently could just walk out the door in the next 2 years. Or they're at the deeper into their career, so like they might be getting beyond their peak. I think you're still looking at a younger nucleus of talent that the Sox can hold on to.
Yeah, so. I agree. I think not. I think where they are organizationally, I think the Mets are in win now. I think if the Mets don't win this year or next year, they're in deep trouble.
Right.
I mean, their farm system is completely depleted, worse than what Dombrowski's done with Boston. Mm-hmm. I think Boston's still core group are young guys, and they definitely have the ability to get more guys, and their best players are still young. The Red Sox are in a better position. Now, maybe not for the playoffs today. If you're a Mets fan, you're more excited than you are if you're a Red Sox fan. But overall, the organizations are both going in different directions, no question.
The Sox will move on from Mookie this year.
If they were smart, I'd say hot. I mean, the things that you could do if you traded Mookie Betts with the guys that you have, with all the talent you have there, you could replenish your farm system and bring some stars, and I think it would be a good move for the Red Sox to trade Mookie Betts.
I think they keep him. No, it's not.
Okay, you think they might keep him, but what do you think is good for the organization? What would you do? If you're Dave Dombrowski,
I think you keep it. I think you keep him. There's only so many MVPs.
It's true.
You got one. Like that's.
But there's a point in time where you look at the Red Sox and you say, "Okay, what do we need? What are the assets we have to get what we need? We don't have those anymore. Could Mookie Betts replenish that? A lot like Chapman did and Miller did for the Yankees a few years ago.
Does it change your mind if JD opts out?
No, because if he opts out, you're getting nothing back. You're getting nothing. You need to get something back.
But you don't pay his salary anymore, so maybe you go easy on Mookie and arbitration, fix that relationship.
I don't know. I think you build organizations now from the bottom up, and you bring talent in, and there's plenty of teams out there that have great teams like San Diego. Think of what San Diego could do with Mookie Betts, with the talent that they have in the farm system. You could probably snatch one of those stars, those kids that are playing now. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's definitely something they have to look at, but with Dombrowski, as we know, that's not his MO. He doesn't build farm systems. He tries to win championships.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that was it. That was good. That was all very good.
That's hot or not.
We'll be right back.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I was out last 2 weeks, and last week I was out.
Yep.
And you guys did a great job, but I overheard our promo here, and you were talking about a frog named Itchy.
Yeah.
And Itchy was ill, and you were babysitting for him.
Yeah.
Do you have any updates on Itchy?
We're going to have to pour out one of the brass monkeys for the little Itch man.
Oh, no.
Itchy, apparently 16 and a half years old. They thought he was 15.
What is that in human life? Do we know what frog years are?
Ancient.
He was probably like 140 years
something
old.
Like
yeah,
something like that.
Something like that.
They had to put Itchy down earlier this week. Itchman and I had a good weekend together. Thought he was doing okay, but it might have just been, you know, smoke and mirrors. So
yeah, I'm sad to hear about Itchy. Yeah. But
R.I.P. Itch.
Yeah. Well, good thing you had a chance to spend some time with him.
Yeah.
So sad time.
No.
Just got a text here. I don't think you guys are very good at thinking about sports logically and non-emotionally.
He's the Daniel Jones guy, the guy who was complaining.
And that's okay. I mean, listen, that's what sports is, though. See, that's the problem. Like, I mean, this is logical, and then our emotion is part of it. That's part of being a fan. That's what makes it so special, is that that's part of what makes sports so great.
Yeah.
So it's okay if you don't like our passion or our emotion to it, but I think we are throwing a logic into it. It's just that
occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, but there's definitely emotion when it comes to sports. But we appreciate you texting us. We love when we get texts on the text line. Our poll question today was Pete Rose or Mike Trout. Who do you want? I say Pete Rose. I love Pete Rose.
I'll go Trout.
You got Trout.
Yeah.
I can see why. Why, you know, you can't really go wrong. What's the community like here, kiddo?
Well, the community agrees with Austin. 87% Mike Trout.
Mike Trout wins. Yeah, well, I can see why. I can see, you know, especially when you look at the what they bring to the table. Mike Trout, it does everything. He hits home runs. He steals bases. And I can see where at the end of his career, maybe he lines up. But to me, where baseball is today, it's all about launch angle. There's a lot of strikeouts. Pete Rose, there's not a lot of Pete Roses anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about DJ LeMahieu with the Yankees, and they think, wow, you know, there's not a lot of guys like DJ LeMahieu. There's not a lot of guys hitting the mid-threes. You know what I mean? But back in the 80s and 90s, there were a bunch of guys hitting 300, 350, 360.
Even the early 2000s.
Like, there was, yeah.
I loved watching Ichiro.
Yeah.
That was just so fun.
And to me,
just him slapping singles in the left field.
And to me, I don't know why more players don't do it. Like, that's winning baseball. The reason the Yankees have been so successful is a lot to do with DJ LeMahieu being on base all the time.
Yeah.
Driving in runs, getting singles when they're second. It's not about three-run homers. Teams, you don't win championships that way. The Yankees never...
You can't have three-run homers without guys on
that's
base.
That's very true. And, like, let's face it here, realistically speaking, when it comes to... When the Yankees were winning their championships, they weren't home run hitters. They were all singles and doubles hitters. They were guys that moved runners over, stole base. That's how they won baseball games. That's how it is. That's why, you know, that's why I like Pete Rose. And he should be in the Hall of Fame.
That's baseball,
too.
Susan.
That's baseball, Susan. Oh, that's a well played there. All right, guys, we are Sports Saturday. We're here every Saturday from 10 to noon. Keep it right here on this station. You got the Red Sox coming up this afternoon. Coverage starts at 3:05. And the New York Yankees are on our sister station, WVMT. Coverage starts at 2:27. Have a great weekend. I'm going to hit the links with a couple of my buddies. You're going camping. Aaron's probably going to start prepping for next Saturday's show because that's what professionals do.
Hit them far, hit them straight, hit them infrequently.
And don't lose balls. It costs a lot of money. We'll see you next week.